building now without knowing future construction, I mean, there's so many unknowns that.
Yeah, and the Band-Aid, other than the roof can't wait. The rest of it, you know, we can pick our timing on that.
But the roof for $250,000 is an immediate, need regardless of.
Yeah, I don't think we can go another year without roofing it.
So if we do the roof, how, and nothing else, will that give us 10 years?
Yeah, without any major, I mean, we may have to replace some HVAC units along the way, but, you know, that's $20,000 at a time that you don't recoup, that you don't get back, but.
Right.
But you can keep it functional and comfortable.
But then again, like you said earlier, we got potentially a Hillcrest that we could have students, I mean.
I think we could, so when are we looking at doing the roof in FY23?
No.
No, 22.
22.
22, okay, so we're doing the roof this year.
Yeah.
Well, the bid did come in higher than we.
The bids came in at 270, and I think I had.
Okay.
250, down.
And that would be.
Is that what I had, was 250? No, I think I had three.
That was at Bridger.
On the capital improvement, I think I had 300 and something.
That would be after July 1st, this would then be the summer?
With material shortages, it's probably gonna be September, October.
Can you re-roof while students are there?
Yeah. It's not ideal, but it can be done.
So we'll complete that in FY22. But it sounds like with Adams, if we put the roof on, that's a decision that we can, you know, move out into the future as far as whether to rebuild or to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Remodel, so that.
Yeah, I mean, even without the $3 million, if you didn't dump that into it, you could get another 10 years out of that building without any real capital outlay.
So if we did the roof, and then that gives us a chance to see what happens. So best case / worst case scenario, we get tons of students from the Eliason property. The gravel pit gets built and brings in a whole bunch of kids because families can't afford large houses.
Right.
And our enrollment takes a bump. And we're saying, okay, we've got to adjust boundaries somewhat, and we need to rebuild Ellis. We've got a really solid argument for the community. So we've seen our enrollment has gone up. We need a place to put students. Adams is a great community. We want to keep this school there. So we're going to rebuild Adams, and we have information. Now, some people say, oh, you should have seen this coming. And I'm like, but you can't. You can't predict where it's going to be.
Well, and the thing is, right now, it's really hard to justify, except for the state of the building a new school. Now, the state of the building would be a reason to rebuild the school. But I think showing the public that we have our buildings full,
is
a great way to go out to the public. And I also think we need to get a little bit through the COVID stuff and into a little more regular economy before we go out to the community if we want to sell a bond.
When's the bond? We talked about this last night. We've got a bond coming up that's going to be retired soon.
No, these are GO bonds. And so we've got a series 2014 and 2019 for the GO bonds. And so those are going to be.
I mean, will we have more bonding capacity in the next?
Oh, we have more bonding capacity. We're less than half of our bonding capacity right now. So we have the capacity to do it.
It's just
anytime you want to.
Want to go. Okay.
And we have to go to the public for a GO bond.
And it would be a tax increase for, you know.
Right.
For the public. I mean, the last, when we issued the bonds, we were able to structure it such that it wasn't an increase. But when we rebuilt the high school, that was an increase. That was a big jump. And so this one, you know, for one elementary school, we'd still need, it wouldn't be as big of a jump as the high school was, but we'd still need to.
We would have to be able to justify that on a public where if we had full
and
schools.
And we want
to
do the Malaga Middle School stuff with the same time. We really bond elections are not fun. And so I would recommend that you do one big bond at the same time. We know that our only older schools now are Adams and Mount Logan Middle School. So why not sell them together as we have two old schools that we, and then we'll be we'll have the best, most beautiful schools anyway.
Between our reserves and just our normal cash flow, we could probably get to the rec center remodel on here without having to bond, could we, if we did the remodel at Adams?
Yeah, we should. But the city is 50-50 on the rec center, so, you know, we've tried to press them a little bit to say, you know, what's a timeline that you could come up with half of the cost of this? Because I believe we thought it would be $10 million, so our part of that would be $5 million to do everything that we need to do with the rec center. And all of these numbers are, you know,
right,
not taking into account the current economic situation that we're in. And so...
And that's also considering that we basically just give it a facelift and modernize it. Yeah. We don't change the layout or structural integrity of the building.
And the impression I got last week when we met with the mayor and the staff is that their goal is to have a city-county partnership at a rec center. Is that...
Mayor Daines would like to have a county-city indoor pool and rec center. One of the things that, as I've, you know, we spoke briefly about this, Jeff Don and I, and with Russ Aquina, looking at the rec center, you know, one of the challenges right now as a joint use facility is separating students from patrons with the way the floor plan is designed. So we talked about, you know, what if as part of the remodel, you were to add on to the northwest corner of the rec center, do a two-story addition, and on the top story you put a new weight room, and underneath you have storage, and then you build a second-story walkway, you know, connecting the rec center to the high school. The high school likes that because right now they lose a lot of kids in the parking lot. You know, when they're going transitioning from the main building to the rec center for PE classes, it's really easy to turn left and just keep going or find a car or something like that. That also makes building security harder because you have to keep those ground level doors unlocked for students to be able to access the building, which allows more uncontrolled access. If you have that upper level access point, you lock all the ground level doors, you know, put some security features in there, students still have a safe, covered, climate controlled way to cross the building. And then if you've now got the weight room and the rubber gym and the basketball, the main gym, then you can find, we can look at a way to put some interior doors in the hallways that can be locked so you can actually separate patron traffic from student traffic, which is attractive to us because it increases security for students. It's attractive to the city because it increases community access to the rec center during school hours. But you can't put those control points in unless we don't have to take students to the far side of the building to get in the rec room and things like that. So
that $10 million, $5 million, or our share would allow us to do that? Is that where you're...
I don't know if it would be enough to allow us to do that.
Yeah, I mean,
it's tough.
That $10 million is what we've talked about for the last 5 years. So.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see, $30
million.
Well, our GO bonds won't be paid off till 2039.
Oh, okay.
So, we would have, you know, if we're going to go out for if we're going to do anything with the middle school or Adams, we'd need to go out for
a bond.
But we have the capacity to be able to do that. It's
desire.
Just what percentage of that capacity we want to hit.
You know, look at this. I think obviously we need the roof.
Yeah.
Regardless of what we do in there,
right.
I don't think, I'm not in a position to say, well, yeah, let's do Adams remodel in 23-24 fiscal years. I think we have to see. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I think the long game is the only game to play right now. You have to take care of immediate needs and try to predict the future.
And keep up on those immediate needs.
So
is there anything within the Adams school with the additional male grad students that would ask for some new model, like for the media center or anything like that?
Once we get the new roof on, we were going to do a patch and paint job in there to take care of all the leak stains. but it's
going
to be
at least make it nicer,
presentable.
More appealing.
Yeah,
presentable.
Still going to be old, but it's going to be presentable,
functional.
Yeah,
look better.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm what should I just take the Adams remodel off of there for the $3 million? And
I think so.
I think that, you know.
So
the roof. We put off the roof because the remodel was on it.
Right.
So we thought, well, we'll just wait until the remodel do the roof, and now.
With the roofing and stuff.
Yeah. The roof, we've already budgeted for the roof, so I think we can take that off, and if that'll give us 10 years, that gives us some time to really see what the patterns are, see what we need to do before. And then, like you said, I think it's a good idea to do Mount Logan and Adams kind of in the same pond, so you're not going back and having election after election. You know, you just say, well, this is, you know.
What about the church property by Ellis? Any of these status updated at all?
They're still going through committees. You know, we've gone back and forth. He asked us if we would, basically came back, and because they're really struggling with the two different appraisals. And so he came back and said, well, could you give us, because our appraisal was $194,000, theirs was like $370,000. So I guess the presiding bishopric at the time was struggling with that, and he said, could you take the parking lot out of that and just give us the $194,000 for the building in the area? And that was $74,000 of the $194,000. So the building in the area that the building's on was appraised at $120,000. And I said, well, you know, I talked to Frank, and we both felt like, no, we can't do that. We can't take an appraisal and just pull this out and say, oh, that, you know. And so I did tell him. I said, the value of the property has gone up. I mean, this appraisal's now a year old. We know that value's gone up. We feel like we could add to that without going and getting another appraisal. We could say market conditions, that value has gone up, and we could do that. And so that 120 now is going to be, it's like 140 or something like that. That I said, you know, and so we're willing to move where we can. Our problem is we had an appraisal, and then you had an appraisal, and we had an independent appraiser look at both appraisals, and he basically slammed your appraisal and said, you can't appraise that way. And he basically validated the appraisal that we had done. And so you've asked us to do those things. And so he said, okay, he would take that back to the committees, and it's still going through, but, you know.
So just as an update, the church property down next to Breakerland is being sold, traded out, what have you. I mean, Al's is building that great big storage unit, right? Those warehouse type things.
Right.
But there's a bunch of conversation going on right now about putting in 12th North Street from 6th to 10th.
Oh, wow.
In front of Gash High School. And all but 16 acres of that church property is being traded or massaged somehow with Logan City and private
VTEC on it.
But the conversation that came out of that was that the church is trying to trade property, the LDS church, instead of sell property because it affects their tax status with Zions or whatever their conglomerate is for that. So I just wondered if that was affecting any of it that we're working on or not. We obviously don't have property.
I haven't said anything about trades or anything like that. It's
assuming
just
that's not a
trade them for Riverside.
Not a case, but.
Yeah, that'd be a good
just
one.
Just
call
the big
guys.
That's what we should do.
Well, what is nice, though, is I believe we are the preferred buyer.
Yeah.
And that's
that's
nice that they know that we are the only logical. And part of that is we also know, didn't you include in that what it's going to take down the building?
Yes. And so, you know, we originally we had just a rough estimate that it would cost $150,000 to $175,000. We went with a higher amount on that because we thought there may be some asbestos and other things in there. They asked us to get a closer appraisal with the company that they used to do demolitions, and so we did that, and that came in at like 131 or something. So our bid, our actual bid went from 19,000 to 46,000, I think, or, and so it was more, but they're just, I don't know, they're caught up. Because what they did, their appraisal went out and said, you know, what if these were lots that were subdivided and ready to sell? And that's not what they told us to do when we bid on it. They gave us instructions to, this is a, you know, yeah, you need to have this appraisal done as if it's bare land with you taking the cost of taking the building down, and we want the building down. Anyway, they switched people. Somebody got promoted, and so they moved someone else into that. And so I've had conversations. It took him a while to really figure out and get to all the detail, but he has that and he understands that. But for some reason, they still are thinking, and I think they may be thinking, well, do we want to, you know, do we want to take the building down ourselves and do the lot so that we can get the higher amount? And I'm like, well,
you should probably.
Then you got to go.
I took some pictures of the school yesterday from all perspectives, and I think if they saw the pictures of what it looks like now that property is being dwarfed by our new school, I think they'd get a vision for, hey, what's realistic here is that we need to sell this to the district and quit.
And I haven't
messing around with it.
I haven't approached them on that, but we were over there. Several months ago, and they put a new roof on it,
yeah.
You know, and so, and I saw on their appraisal that you know they had slated $270,000 for that roof, and I'm just like, so you put a $270,000 roof on our property,
on the demolition property.
Apparently, the right hand and left hand were really
bump that estimated value up
by putting on the roof.
And so I don't know if they're choking on that because they put the new roof on and it's like, oh, we put this much into it. We're going to lose money on it. I don't know.
The Wilson roof, that's another, that's...
You know, that was kind of a moving target. It's not in, I mean, it's one of the better condition roofs.
Earthquake centered in the pool.
So if you're, you know, if you're going to spend $15 million or up, and you didn't replace all your mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, then you're building on, you know, $15 million on top of stuff that you know is going to fail at some point.
Frank, were you able to talk condemnation on that one?
It's tied to eminent domain. So any public, it's not a public entity, but it's, we're a, what's the official term, a subdivision of a state. Yeah.
Governmental.
A governmental entity has the ability under Utah state law to declare eminent domain, and you then condemn a property, you pay, you know, fair market value for the property, and then you can take possession of it. You have to be able to show that there's a need for the property, that there's a compelling interest in having it, and you have to demonstrate that you have attempted a reasonable purchase from the property owner. So if you go through those, if the district were to go through those steps, the district could, if there were a need, go through the process of eminent domain, and then, you know, pay for a property, whether it's the price of that person wanted or not.
1.5 now.
So 1.5 million now?
Each dropped it. It's such a beautiful building. It's a blank canvas, if you read the real estate ad. There's so many things you could do with it. So who adjudicates the whether it falls into eminent domain? I mean, is that a court, local court decision that says yes?
I think we declare it.
We would declare it.
We declare,
and then
but
if
who,
the person were to challenge it, then I believe it would go to a local municipal court.
Because the rec center, when they had to do eminent domain, there was a court battle. And I just couldn't remember which.
I believe that still goes to a local court. I'm not 100% sure.
And it's up to the judge to determine, make the judgment.
Yeah.
So really all we're doing is forcing them to sell at
market value. Yeah.
And I will tell you, when I was trained for the board, Ron Peterson told me we're never going to do eminent domain again, and that must have been from the rec center because it was such a PR perspective that he just said, and you'll be on this board for a while. Don't, that's not worth it. So that's just something to really ponder about before ever.
So what about just buying it?
I think that's a different discussion between taking people's residential homes and
pool, it looks like.
Yeah.
Well, and this probably would be a closed session discussion, too.
Yeah, I think that would be a...
So, I mean, we could come up with the funds to purchase that facility. It would be a check signed with a steaming hot dish of crow, just because... we know it's not worth what he'd be asking. Now, the other side of that is we can't pay more than appraised value. So we would have to get an appraisal done, and the appraisal would determine
the fair market
value of the property, and that's what we would be offering. So we wouldn't automatically be offering $1.5
million. Based on the property, you know, it sits, it's probably not worth much, is it? Anybody else? I mean, what could you use that property for unless you bought the field next to it from Miller's?
And he's holding on to that for...
Yeah, you got to buy it, and you'd have to do some interior stuff. I mean, the last serious potential purchaser he had was someone who was looking to doing an indoor climate-controlled storage facility there. And that's when he was, you know, seeking a rezone of the property from the municipal council, and they were talking to us, and we said, we don't have a problem with rezoning and him selling it. We just think he ought to be held to follow through on the commitments he made when he purchased the property from us the first time. And so the city has been holding to that, and they haven't done any rezones because he hasn't done the things that he committed to do in the original property arrangement. So, I mean, that would be an expense that would, you know, then the question would be, what do we use the property for? You know, there are lots of options. I mean, you could immediately throw in parking. You could build a secondary facility for, you know, office space. We're always scrounging to find where do you put people.
Could do a green space.
We could do a green space.
That would make sense in light of the expansion on the south end or the seminary buildings.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's another thing that we haven't discussed. It wasn't on this paper. Was, you know, when, what are we going to do with that seminary building property? When, you know, are we going to do some kind of a parking lot? What do we want to look at there?
With the seminary building, the administration of the middle school has asked for a couple of years to do something that would increase the amount of recreational space the students have outside those cafeteria doors. Yeah. You have the field space, but you got to go through a parking lot and portables to get to it. So it's not easy to supervise that space. In fact, managing a lunch, if you were to use that space, would be terrible because you got all sorts of blind spots, and it's just not a great facility for managing a middle school lunch period. So they've been asking, you know, for some additional space. You could expand the basketball hoops, put in some grass space, et cetera. In order to do that and really do it nicely, I think you got to do something where you block off that driveway that comes from the east.
Okay.
down past the side of the school into the parking lot. So one thought has been you take out the seminary building and you put in a drop-off lane and parking lot area that's here, and then it's the cars are now separated from the building. That then allows you to expand some, use that space to expand some and create some recreational opportunities for kids there.
Is this your bus drop-off idea? Is that what you're thinking of?
Well, this would be more the parent, because the bus drop-off would still be on the east side. But right now, we don't allow parent drop-off.
And so they're on the streets.
So they're on the street. So is that bus now, drop-off, would it be better to have on that south side? That's a whole
lot. I think it would be better to put the bus drop on the south side and have the parent drop-off on the east side, because then you, when you're dropping students off late, whatever, you've got a straight shot into the office. Whereas if you're dropping off on the other side, you got to walk all the way down the halls. It's too easy for kids to go, or for anyone to go through the building without checking in at the office first. Whereas if you're doing your bus drop, and that's where your bus drops kids off, that's already the, and they're right there by the cafeteria. That's where you want them going in.
And that's the discussion we had about those other homes that would facilitate that. Could we do that without those other
homes? Perfect world. I would love to own the house that's just south of that driveway, you know, Mount Logan.
The Cape Cod
one. Yeah, the Cape Cod one with the field next to it. You own that, now you've got space. You can put a small soccer field in there with a fence. You have places to put kids. You move the bus drop off down to the south side of the building with some parking, and I think you make a much more attractive. You got space to do things.
But that home was we didn't buy it 3 years ago and it was for sale. So it is a recent acquisition. It has a preschool in it. And we probably don't want to talk about personal properties.
We had an opportunity.
That's true.
We had an opportunity 3 years ago.
As well as it was just up for sale and we didn't take any opportunity.
I don't know, but it's got people living there. They run a child care center. It's great. So just as we're looking at space and flexibility of space, that's always nice. But that's not something that we're actively pursuing. What we're looking at is how we take the space that we own and how to.
In that conversation too, you have to think if in FY27 you're going to do a $15 million remodel. Is the office going to land in the same spot it is now? You know, how do you not spend that money twice if you change all your drop-offs and parking,
right?
And then you come in and spend $15 million on a remodel building and flip everything.
So you got to consider both.
Yes.
So an appraisal, is that the next step?
If that were something that we wanted to pursue, then I think, that'd probably be the next steps for us would be getting an appraisal done and notifying them that there's interest and we'd like to get an appraisal.
Don't use the church as an appraiser.
Make him an offer that you'll buy it for fair market value and he gets to choose the appraiser. Whatever that appraisal is.
He goes and gets his license.
Yeah. I guess you got to close your defenses on him.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are things that we can look at if that's something that the board wants to consider.
How much are appraisals?
Okay, are we good with
yes
our construction remodel plan?
It's fuzzy towards the end, but
yeah. Well, I mean, the 8 additional classrooms we originally thought were 2 million,
the roof and
the
additional
classrooms was my assumption, thinking that they just needed the same footprint of Riverside at ECC. But in talking to them, it grew exponentially from 8 classrooms to
more
10 classrooms and a multi-purpose room and extra restrooms. The all valid points, but you don't consider that until you talk about the people that are using it every day.
Yeah.
Right.
So it wasn't just the price of construction that escalated, it was their needs.
So is the $2 million going to cover their wish list, or
no? It was that's why we put a pause on it. One is, you know, construction costs were going way up, but we were looking at a little over 4, I think, was the final. You know, and so that.
Yeah,
I think we were just like 4. I think we were like 3.
Maybe
we
yeah.
So 3.8 with an estimate on a moving target of construction. Yes.
So
track a year from now, just no idea.
No idea.
Yeah. We said waiting gives us a chance to see where prices go. So at least if they don't come back down, we have time and ability to plan for it and say, okay, now we have a better idea of what this facility needs to include. We have a better idea of where costs are going to land. We can plan for that as opposed to say, let's do it, and then saying, oh, wow, this is more than what we had originally budgeted for.
The economists that work for like the Concrete Contractors Association, and there's several of them that do construction related estimates, they've been saying that they anticipate that they're gonna go back down to 2020 prices, or closer to, but they're not gonna get back to where they were pre-pandemic or pre-economic change. So they think they will come back down, but not a full retracement.
Where it was before.
You done it too.
So supply is the critical thing right now, right?
Yeah, yeah. And as long as supply is short, prices are just whatever they can charge.
So with that, the other things with facilities, you see on there the bullets, potential projects moving forward, the two that I think we need to, I would really like for us to spend a little bit of time discussing are the Logan Library Hillcrest one and the feasibility study for Hatches Camp. Just quick update with the Hatches Camp. We have an extension through June 25th on the due diligence time period. That was supposed to expire at the start of the month, but this goes to the end just because the seller wants to move on, wants to get that taken care of. So we have done, up to this point, our position has been, well, let's gather information, let's see where we're at. We know how we would use the property, we know what it would cost, we know what the Forest Service will support, we know what buildings we would keep, which ones we would get rid of. We have an idea of how we would schedule it for usage. So the only thing left really would be to decide, do we think this is something we want to do or not, and then the raising of the money. That's the question we really have to answer, because our time now would have to be spent, well, first on raising funds, if we wanted to move forward with the project. And as we've known, talking with the Forest Service, there's gonna be a lot of coordination of work to be done with Forest Service, with UDOT, and the district. So my question for the board is a couple things. One is, are we at a place where we feel like this is a project we want to move forward with, yes or no? And then is that dependent on us raising the funds first? If it is, then the question would be, do we feel like we need to raise the full, $10 million that we're looking at? Or is this something where we say, if we can raise $5 million by, in time for the board to vote on this on June 22nd, then we would be comfortable moving forward. We're just running into a little bit of a time crunch with this in terms of deciding, are we moving forward or not? So the question, there's obviously the question of cost and long-term maintenance expense. If we're asking for money here, or we're allocating funds to this, what are the things we're not allocating funds to, and we're not allocating resources to, so what's our opportunity cost?
I reached out to school construction, the State Board of Education, and the State Fire Marshal's office, just to kind of pick their brains of things to look out for that may be required on that property. And one of them that I see is the biggest red flag is it would be considered Class E occupancy, which is the same as a school, which is the most stringent building code and life safety code. So you would have to have full fire suppression in all the buildings, which, since it's on spring-fed water, you would have to have a storage reservoir of sufficient gallonage to cover the entire property, either gravity-fed or pumped. And that's going to be something that the Forest Service would have to approve. Yeah. So it would be an additional either excavation or above-ground storage tank.
As
the swimming pool won't work.
I don't know that it'd be big enough.
And Logan River won't work.
No.
As much... And I just have to say, I'll put it out there now. As much as I would love, when I, in the back of my head, envision what I think this could be, and I look at that, and I, as much as I would love to have that, I just don't see that this is the right place for us to put our energy and resources right now. I think if we had the energy and resources in hand, you know, we could possibly do something really fantastic, but we've got other needs, and
well, you have going other towards needs that, for your time too.
Right. That's my only concern.
You've been reaching out, you and Shanna. I mean, we're looking $5-10 million, and the discussion you and I have had is a lot of the resistance we're finding from potential donors is we don't have skin in the game as a district. Is that?
Well, that's one suggestion that's been given to us. As we've been reaching out,
it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, and I don't know if this is, I don't know if this is similar to that other organizations deal with when fundraising for large projects, but. People are very protective of the relationships that they have currently established, and suggesting that someone else should now perhaps tie into that relationship is challenging sometimes, because people have put work into building relationships with the individuals who are able and interested in doing these types of projects. And they're hesitant to start taking other projects to these people without full confidence in kind of where the project is going and what's going on. And I can't say that I disagree with that or I don't understand that. I mean, people want to, when you've spent a lot of time and energy building that relationship of trust and collaboration, you want to protect it. I would imagine. So that's been a challenge as we've been reaching out to people and identifying, you know, who should we be talking to and starting those conversations. It's been very slow going getting in front of people.
To me, from a fundraiser perspective, because we should probably understand what other projects are out there that might be concerning to a relationship like that. Is it just the potential food pantry remodel? Is that a potential project?
We don't know what they are, but as we approach individuals,
or is it diluting the availability of funds by adding
another thing, potential the slice of the pie?
Right.
And I don't know, and maybe I'm not describing it right, but as we talk, one of the things we've been doing is going to individuals who we know have connections, either through work or social or whatever, with individuals who do tend to give donations. And as we're asking, you know, we're looking for information on who we should be reaching out to, you know, so we can do that, or maybe we could do that with you, or you could give us an introduction. We're not making any headway.
Yeah.
We're not getting names. We're not saying, well, and these are, we're working with people who we have working relationships with. but we're not getting that. So we're not 100% sure where the hesitation like that is coming from. But Shannon and I are both running into it.
So it's not like you can say we've got a commitment up to this point of X amount of dollars. We don't have anything. So
nothing meaningful, nothing substantial.
So between now and a week and a half on the 20th, or 2.5 weeks on the 25th,
very unlikely
we're going to get that level of commitment that I think we're looking for. Is that
based on what we've seen so far? Now, what Shannon and I are trying to do is just avoid cold calling. You know, we can start doing that, but we've felt that's not effective, and we just haven't been successful with getting the tie-ins. Yeah. So that's where we are with the funding piece of it.
But I just speaking for myself, I love the concept. I love the idea, and I think it has potential, but. Also, as you talked about the opportunity costs, what would we be taking away from? We've identified a lot of things. I can see how it could be a huge strength, and I can see it as an opportunity. But is it at the top of our list of, I'd like to support, I was hoping to win the lottery when I went to Yellowstone, I didn't do it, but that's the... The reality is such that it may be not a feasible thing.
Do we need to make a motion or just take it off the table? We don't have a motion now.
We haven't taken any official motion action to pursue it. It's just been a study item and seeing how feasible do we think this is. If our decision as a result of this conversation is, this just isn't feasible, and this is one of those really hard decisions that we have to make as a board, that we just don't think this is feasible, then I don't think we would have to take any official action on it.
We just direct you to
let them know that
we're not interested.
We've done our due diligence and we love the idea, but this just is not something that we feel we can generate
the resources for. We just can't build a reservoir.
And if they want to find some donors for us, we'd love to do it.
Right.
Whether I win the lottery or not.
Right? Utah State trying to make the forestry camp work for
decades.
Yeah,
that's what the fire marshal's office told me. And they said they ran into the same problems that they were warning me of.
Yeah.
So I think with that...
The occupancy, you throw a whole new set of rules at it.
I think what we could do then is... Over the course of the next year, not immediately, but over the course of the next year, I think it would be beneficial for us to investigate what we discussed with Stephen in our meeting of partnering with BSA, maybe working towards having access to a facility where we can still do outdoor learning experiences for kids. They have the facility set up, and we're partnering with them instead of us being the sole owners and maintainers.
And we know those facilities they're wanting to have some occupancy.
Right. And we have a number of sites that are within an hour of our school district.
And the possibility of utilization of time that they're not normally utilized.
Right.
Right.
So.
Unless that owner wants to donate the property, would love to have that donation. But
yeah.
I don't think that's his primary goal.
No. Hey, thank you. I'm sorry we weren't able to come up with a more invigorating response.
As much due diligence as we could.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
Exactly.
Do we have a free pass for the next year to go to St. Anne's Retreat, though?
I have never been.
But
how do you get over there?
There's a bridge.
It says no trespassing.
Now, you can't trespass in the building. The buildings are privately owned.
They're off limits.
The land is Forest Service.
Yeah, it was very...
So going to the land...
Jeff's going to dress up as heck of a...
Which would have been a challenge for us to have other people
so
on the property.
Yeah.
So we've learned a lot about the Forest Service, and I have to say, the Forest Service staff have been outstanding. They have been responsive. They've been very supportive. They have been great to work with. That would not be a primary, you know, obstacle. It's the cost to really making it work. For those who aren't aware, the Logan Library Hillcrest Conversation. Logan City, as we know, is rebuilding or building a new library. It's going to be in its existing location. They have approached us about the possibility of using the old Hillcrest Elementary, the current Ellis East School, as a temporary location for some library services. The reason, or the main attractive point here for them, is it lines up almost exactly with our current timeline for moving out of the building. They would want to access it around January of 2022, which we're planning on moving out November, December of 2021. What we had discussed tentatively with them was they would house the library in the south end of the existing building, so where the media center is, the classrooms there on the south side, and we would be able to start demolition on the north side of the building. The reason for trying to do both at the same time was we shared with them, well, one of the biggest challenges we'll get is partnering with you, is the community perception that, again, we're just delaying their access to field space. They'll have playground space. Hillcrest will have playground space. It's the open field space that they would be complaining about. So we said, well, if we were to start demolition, we wouldn't want to create field space and then have to mess that field space up again when we go finish demolishing the building. But if we start demolishing and we're showing, no, we're making progress, this is coming, we're partnering with the city to help them out, this is good for our community, we have the data that shows our students are the ones that go to the library. Our Logan High School students are there every day for their after-school programs for teens. The connection between the school district and the Logan Library is a positive one. So there is direct benefit to the school district to working to help them keep some library services going during the construction period. But the question was, is that something that we want to do? We would have to look at utility costs, so they would be taking care of the utility costs for the portion of the building they were in.
And how long do they foresee their building to take?
They were 14 months.
14 months.
So it would be another year that the building would stay up.
Yeah. But we also talked about if there's an increase in demolition costs, that there would have to be...
Right, so one of the questions would be...
We'd have to be held harmless.
Yeah, if our demolition costs were to rise because of the delayed time frame, that there would be an arrangement with the city where they help
it
us.
It should be our help minimal.
Well, I thought it was going to be minimal until we met with the city, and the mayor talked about the construction demolition site at the landfill is almost full. So we postponed that another year and a half. Are we shipping it all to Clarkston? That should be a drastic increase.
Yeah. Increases transportation costs.
Yep.
Wow. Which, if we were to draft the language of an agreement, that would be in the agreement that here's what we have projected for construction, for demolition costs. Anything beyond this would need to be, you know, covered by the city as part of their use of the facility.
To me, the BR is pretty important that we cooperate with Logan City. And we can flip that, I think, to our benefit to highlight literacy in a continuous format that Logan City Schools supports fully.
Yeah, it's not the best location for them.
No, that's what I was thinking.
I think us at least entertaining it and showing goodwill that we're willing to work with them, at least. Curious.
Yeah, it would be better if we had two extra rooms, three extra rooms at the new Ellis, and they move to the new Ellis building and do the library there. That would be a much better location.
Did Jeff, you have a chance to rent per month or do anything in terms of that? How much do we charge?
haven't had the time to sit down and talk about it since our meeting last week.
We looked at it.
Jeff and I looked at rental prices per square foot in Logan for warehouse, just warehouse storage spaces. And we decided that for 1 year, it would be, was it a million?
It seemed like it was two, was it 200,000 a month?
Yeah, it came down to like 100, between 150, 200,000, depending on what rate you were looking at, how many square feet. So yeah, it worked out to, we did land on a million.
It was a little over a million.
Yeah.
That was for the whole school though, wasn't it?
Or is that just the South End?
For the whole school. So if you were doing just the South End.
Look at that.
So I have to do some extrapolation on the utilities too. To figure out what square footage would be heating, cooling.
My guess is square footage rental, we'd probably be looking, if it was a million for the whole school, maybe 400,000 for that South End. And then we have to look at whatever the utility costs would be.
We wouldn't want to charge them that much though, would we?
Well, that's why Jeff and I were looking at the numbers. We wanted to see what was going on in the community. If we're looking at having them cover the cost of any increases in demolition, then I think that would be part of, you bring the monthly rental down.
We're likely to suggest a cost plus type of a proposal. Mm-hmm. Make sure we cover it.
I think the plus should be plus enough that there's benefit to the district for doing this.
Because it would be a lot easier to just
a picture of us holding hands saying, hey, look how we work well together. But we got to find what that plus is.
These prefaces too, what can happen with the rec center.
Yeah, we've got to justify community wise.
We still got them as a partner. So
it's give and take, so
don't get them mad.
Yeah, so I think we don't need to charge full price for the rental, but I think identifying what's the benefit to the district for doing that, and I should share that with them in our meeting with them, say, hey, we're going to have patrons who are frustrated that we're delaying access to field space, both parents at the school and just people in the neighborhood. And I'll go talk to Larry.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah, I've already heard them.
I'll get a few calls. But
took away their view.
Yep.
The new school.
But I think there's echoing what Don said, I think there's definite benefit for us showing that we're willing to put something together. We want to work with them. We're willing to sacrifice a little bit in terms of our access to the facility and, provide opportunities, use that partnership with the city.
I think it'd be a good use.
And they also talked about the portables, right?
Didn't we talk about that another option? That would be if they were going out to their service center.
Service center, yeah.
Because if they were,
told them about the cost, I think they kind of backpedaled on that a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think once they decided that if they were at Hillcrest, that would be the space they needed. They wouldn't need anything beyond it.
Okay.
So with that, based on what I'm understanding, we'll work on putting together the language for what the cost would be for renting utilities.
And making sure they cover any additional demolition cost.
Yeah. We'll work with them on that. And then the Ellis Edition, right now it's just contingent on when we are able to purchase the property to have space for it. And then I think this next year will really be instructive as we see, who comes in. Those housing developments are going to be finished. The apartments by Logan High will be finished. And we'll see what that does with enrollment.
How many units are going in at Elias property? It looks huge.
When you go past it.
It is. I want to say around 300.
I'm going to go reach out to
some of them one bedrooms.
Talk to Jason Adams and Joe Larson down at Wasatch Properties.
A mix of two and three bedroom and single bedroom.
Yeah, and it's on the Planning Commission website. It tells you how many there, but it would be easier from them.
That's the realtor, the builder. about it. I don't know how much Logan City that is from tax purposes.
I don't know. I mean, they're all just rentals.
I'm,
so
I'm going to the housing, the affordable housing workshop next week.
How are you?
I'm really anxious to hear all of the conversation with it, because multi-housing helps somebody for a short window, right? But it doesn't give permanency to anything like what's happening next to you, for example. Those 22 homes are crowded.
Okay, my, they're nice homes, though.
Yeah, right.
So there is some there, yeah.
This multi-housing stuff.
Right, this in the north.
That is just this segment.
I think on the property tax end, it's consistent, because it's still on the assessed value of the property. I mean, the owner is covering that and passing that on to the residents.
And then there's the low income that is going in north of me, that's in North Logan, but is in Logan City School District. And that's another conversation that you're having with Cache District.
So you're working with them on two items, the property at Best End West and?
Yeah, there are three main ones that we're looking at right now. North Logan, Nibley, and on 10th West.
Strata. And Nibley would be what, potentially?
Nibley is
kind of thing like Elias and but a small
I mean, they're putting some housing in there, but it's like two blocks away from Nibley Elementary on that side of Highway 89 or Highway 91. So those students aren't going to be coming our way.
Coming across the
road. So they're already over there. So we're just saying, you know, it makes sense to just let that be part of the Cache County School District.
But give us this part.
Let this be part of Logan, because they're surrounded by Logan students on three sides.
And we'll trade you the North Logan.
Yeah,
for
the North Logan one, that's up by Greenville.
That's the ongoing discussion.
Yeah.
What elementary, so the apartments by the high school, what elementary school would they go to if there were any elementary kids in there?
Based on the boundary proposal, they would go to Ellis.
Okay, that makes sense.
How many bedroom rentals do we know?
I think one and two.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't think there are any three bedroom in those.
And we tried so hard to fit in with the character of the neighborhood, and I look at that and say, okay,
that
character of the neighborhood's
like
changed.
He is first past it, doesn't it?
Yeah, so interesting.
So that's with the Ellis addition, I think we're going to continue to work on purchasing the property. We'll continue to monitor what happens. We do have some empty portables still, so if push comes to shove, we can move some portables around if we have to. We've built that school to be flexible. I mean, we can adjust how some of the rooms are being used if necessary. So we can get through a year or two, see where things land, and then we'll be in a better position to decide what we need to pull the trigger on immediately. Any other questions about facilities, where we're at, what we've got going on?
Tour of the Ellis, any other when we could do that this summer?
Anytime you guys are willing.
I drove by yesterday.
Okay, next board meeting would be nice to do if we could.
22nd.
We're going to do that on 22nd instead of a work session, right?
The paint or a brand of paint?
Okay.
The sheen of the paint and the manufacturer of it.
So the satin versus eggshell versus...
So we specified Sherwin-Williams because their colors are most uniform and easy to match.
They're also.
And that was the one that we couldn't get, so we had to change the manufacturer.
Who'd they go with?
B&G. Okay. Still a good quality paint, just not as readily available to match colors.
Sherwin-Williams is a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody pretty much follows their color patterns.
Yeah, they do.
One other facility thing we haven't talked about before, but just so you know, it's something that we'll need to start considering. This building is starting to get to a point where it needs some upgrades, and we have talked about finishing off the basement and putting in some office spaces. We've got some painting and stuff we need to do, but we've also got the north or southeast corner of the building has got some weird stuff going on. Second floor particularly, where special ed is, for some reason kills technology. they go through computers, printers, copiers, everything.
And who's ever in the office that does it?
And it's whoever. And we can't figure out why. IT is constantly scratching their heads about it, but it just, things just don't work. My office has it a little bit.
And we experienced it last night with three of us.
But that corner of the building with technology, and we don't know why. I don't know if it has to do with the power cord or
maybe
what.
It's because you've been looking at the nunnery.
We went up the canyon, and now we've killed that side of the building.
Door so, when we came back,
but it's been doing it for a number of years.
Right. So the bones of the building, I think we're still in good shape. It's functional. It does what we need to do. But we are getting to the place where it's getting dated to the point of it doesn't necessarily present the image of who we want to be as a district. So that's something we'll be looking at.
Major remodel was 25 years ago.
Right.
Because I was just barely on the board when my name's on the wall, but basically the old board had done it. So it's been a while since any major upgrades were happening.
Yeah, so I don't think we have any safety upgrades that really need to be made here, right, Don? We're good there, but there are some cosmetic things that over the next year or two we might start bringing to you all.
The technology issues, are they on the third floor as well, or is it just mainly on that
side? Oh, that's right. It's third floor. So third floor is where special ed is, second floor is me, and then down here.
This is okay.
This is okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's just weird. Just weird. But it's been a recurring issue, so.
Okay. Do we need a break before we move on?
It depends on how much time you want to spend talking about committees. If you want to talk 5 minutes, then I don't think we need a break. If we want to talk longer than that, I think so.
Thanks.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don.
Appreciate you, Don.
Come and get you, and we'll go to the Chat and Chew for
dinner. Chat and Chew, that's just a bar down. You got to go to the Dude Ranch.
Oh, I've been at the Dude Ranch. They've got good gooseberry pie.
Yeah. Okay. See you,
See you, Don.
Where's the Dude Ranch? It's in the lab. The Chat and Chew's been there forever, but we used to call it this. My parents called it the Sit and Scratch, not the Chat and Chew. Sit and Scratch.
Must have got some kind of bug right there.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd go there myself.
Me and Lou's, I remember.
Yeah.
Up in there for
me and Lou's?
Scones.
Yeah.
I don't remember any other place to eat anywhere.
Dude Ranch. I've been to the Dude Ranch. Deep Creek Inn was another one, but it's close.
The last thing we have on our agenda is just a quick recap of our district committees, the purpose, the intended work, and assignments. So this is handout. This is what we worked on last summer with committees. I haven't changed any committee assignments, in part because this year has been so unusual and disruptive. I wasn't sure that it really changing assignments was something we felt was necessary for next year. So all assignments would remain the same. You see on that first page, we have the members for each of the five board committees with who is assigned to be the chair, the district staff who are assigned to those committees to liaison with board members in terms of creating the agenda items. There are the agendas. I have two statements that are in blue that I wanted to get your all's feedback on. The first is at the bottom of page one, that ideally these meetings will generally be held within a two-week period. The reason why that was originally included was so since all of the directors are participating in the committees, after that two-week window had passed, we would know that all committee meetings had been held. So then in our next directors meeting, that becomes one of our main discussion topics of, okay, here are the things that came out of the meetings. What do we need to be coordinating on? What action do we need to take? That's the primary reason, other than it also makes it a little bit easier for Rachel to schedule, knowing that, hey, we're going to get this done in this block of time. But I wouldn't say that it's essential for the functioning of the committees. So that's something I wanted to bring to you all to see if we wanted to keep that language or if we wanted to just pull a strike it. And I think either way works.
I think the intent was there. Maybe we want to just say that today and discuss, okay, what 2 weeks in October are available for us to schedule, what, 2 weeks in February and April, so we've got a window that we can all work on. I think that would help.
And if it's not 2 weeks, it's within 3 weeks to that month or whatever.
Yeah.
But in the month of this, I worry a little bit about your
probably,
time.
Mm-hmm.
I worry about your time having, that means for you, you would have a Tuesday, Thursday, probably more than that, every committee meeting every night. That would be my concern. Unless the superintendent doesn't attend all committee meetings.
That's the next question. So what I've got here, if we change that to say committee meetings are held over the course of a month, and then we would just say during the month of October, February, April, we do those.
I know you tried to be at every meeting, but also, you know, if you have directors at those meetings, those directors can bring back to your directors' meeting.
Right.
Is that,
And that's one of the reasons why the question is whether I should be in all the meetings. The other one is visiting with you all about how the meetings went. There were some meetings where the conversation seemed to go better when I wasn't present. I don't know if better is the right term, but it goes differently. And people don't immediately have a question and look at me
for
a response. They're more likely to spend some time talking and generating responses for themselves.
It was interesting. I believe it was our employee. No, it wasn't. It was community engagement. Frank was not available. It was really good, and there were some suggestions and also some real praise for our superintendent that came out in the meeting that might have come across as a bit of brown nosing had you been there. But without you there, it was great to hear people talk about, you know, the communication and some of those things. So I just thought that was interesting with employee engagement, to hear them talk without them looking to you. Is this really what's happening?
And also, is there a better use of your time to be in those meetings? I mean,
yeah, there will always be different uses of time.
I mean,
there is something to do.
Being the committee's not important.
Right, but I'm just saying that maybe there are other things that are more important or take precedence over.
Right, there may be. I also think it's really good. I mean, the meetings that I sat in, I listened to, they went really well. And I think there's value to people seeing you all as the board being the leadership in those areas. And in terms of the liaison with the community, when you talk about some of the research on effective boards, and you've got an up and out perspective and a down and in perspective. And the up and out is really focusing on the community part of the school district, and the down and in is the nuts and bolts. And an effective board really drives that up and out perspective, which is what these committees are intended to do. And then the administrators work to address the down and in. And that since this allows my absence, I think in some ways makes it a little bit easier to reinforce the up and out purpose of these committees and why they're board driven.
Perhaps if there's something really, you know, a major discussion item that is something new that we want this committee to deal with, you would attend, or I'm just throwing out some ideas, or that you attended each committee once during the year, rather than that there's an expectation that if you're not there, we have to excuse you.
Yeah, I think something like that, or if the board member and the director who are planning it said, hey, here's, because of this agenda item, we'd really like Frank to attend. I think any of those approaches like that would work well. But I wanted to run that past the group first to see if there were strong feelings one way or the other. If not, then I think I will put in that the superintendent will be available to attend meetings based on the request of the board.
Based on
the board members.
You know, and I needed more help from you setting up an agenda than I needed having you at the meeting, truly. One question I have is, by law, we have an audit committee. Is our fiscal health committee is different from our audit committee, right? But those board members who are on the fiscal health committee are on the audit committee, I believe. And
yes.
Because we want them to know what they're talking about, but it's the committee members other than those two and Jeff.
Correct.
Are different individuals. So I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, the audit committee is focused on the nuts and bolts of compliance. The fiscal health committee is how are we working with our community to communicate the fiscal health of the district and all the things the district does to maintain that fiscal health. And
if we were going out for a geo bond, they may be some of the people that
right.
we would encourage.
That's a great point.
To be, they would understand why we're building, and they would perhaps be those who would lead out, because the board can't go out and mm-hmm. recruit people. It's interesting what we can't do during a geo bond election. So, okay, those were my only questions.
We're just looking at that front page for right now.
That was it. And then the other, again, all committee assignments are the same as they were last summer.
Just a question on that back page of page two. The executive committee, is that, you've got Ann and Greg?
Yeah, that's wrong, because it used to be me and Jenny. So that's why. So the executive committee is wrong. Very back page.
Oh, I apologize. So
that's okay.
I didn't update it. So in the color-coded one above, it shows executive committee as board leadership.
So okay. Probably that
I
last
didn't,
page should be
That last page
printed.
Needs to be updated.
Okay.
Because it also
so
has
board
council
leadership.
Meetings.
Yes. And I kept the council meetings just so you all, again, could see what we had discussed last summer to see if that's something that we want to continue. I guess it's not really a committee assignment discussion.
I think presence and visibility, and I have no problem going.
I wasn't aware of that.
Well, yeah, you came in late to the game, so.
I am still receiving, I don't know, we do now have a Bridger neighborhood chair. The reason Holly was sending it to me was not because I was board president. I was getting it because she sent it to me and to Dean Quell, because she felt like we were the people in the neighborhood who were most involved and would rally the troops if need be. So I'm not sure if I'll continue to get that. Do you want me to send the agenda?
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Well, do you want it to be sent to everybody?
I'd send it to everybody.
Okay, I will send everybody. If I continue to receive it, I'll send everybody an agenda. Then perhaps you could look at it and say, all right, Larry made the assignments for us. You know, I was supposed to attend in June, but it looks like there's a Bridger issue going on, so I'll trade you for my month, that kind of thing,
right.
I think would be helpful.
And I also think we can discuss this as we get closer to the legislative session, but reaching out to the legislators during the session, I think, was valuable. We've had a couple, Chris Wilson and Dan Johnson,
mm-hmm.
respond, say thanks for your continual input. Thank you. I think that's a good
and
tool.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll have JLC next year so that we're down there every Friday as well, talking with them. Frank was always down there anyway. You're not getting to build, looking at a building though as much, so.
I'm hoping. I mean, we haven't heard about meetings at the Capitol next year yet, so we'll see what they
allow
with.
The public in or not.
Yeah, their first JLC meeting is being held tomorrow, so we'll see where things come out of that and what we start hearing. But that is the end of today's agenda. So. So tomorrow, the things we have are starting with student enrollment and district marketing. And then in the afternoon, we'll do a closed session, talk about our contracts. And there was one other topic in the morning. We don't have evaluation pieces, but we'll have the contract renewal. That's one of the things that USBA has really been strongly advising, is separating evaluation from contract renewal, which where we do the contract renewal in the spring. We'll have to talk about it another time to do our evaluations.
I didn't see critical race theory on our discussion.
No, but if you'd like, I can give you an update on what we did yesterday. Would you like to do that now or tomorrow?
Now is fun.
Okay. So yesterday we had Dr. Marilee Coles Ritchie come up. She's a faculty member at Westminster College. She was a professor up at Utah State when I was first hired and was working on my ESL endorsement and my master's degree up there. Her teaching experience, she's taught in Ecuador, she's taught on the reservations, she's taught at a university in Alaska working with Inuit populations, and her focus has been strategies for helping immigrant children succeed in school. So what we did is, with all of the conversations that have taken place at the state level surrounding diversity and equity and inclusion and critical race theory, I asked her to come work with our principals for half a day, just so we would have a common shared understanding among all our administrators of what these terms mean and what they look like in schools. So that's what our morning was spent on yesterday with the principals. We talked about definitions of critical race theory, what this really means in terms of practice, what are we talking about with inclusion. Listened to some excerpts from the state board meeting where they discussed this. Talked about what are the concerns you heard from parents, how would you respond to these concerns. And what I told the principals is, we have a couple of main objectives in providing this training. One is to make sure that you have a solid understanding of what these terms mean, so when patrons or staff come to you with concerns, you can provide some assurances of what we are and aren't doing. A lot of what has been shared about critical race theory has been very incorrect. It's not taught in the state of Utah.
It's misunderstood, though.
It's misunderstood throughout the state. And the way critical race theory shows up in schools is not that it's being taught to students. What it is simply a framework for identifying how race has influenced economic, political, and legal and social frameworks throughout the history of our country. And how are the impacts of those frameworks felt today? So if you can identify them, you're in a better position to then rectify them. It is not about assigning blame. It's not about valuing certain races more than others or causing individuals to feel guilt or anything like that. Now, are there individuals who in their delivery of concepts lead to that? Unfortunately, yes, there are. But that is not a core belief of anything related to critical race theory, and it definitely is not going to be part of anything we do as a district. So the state board's meeting was to approve a board rule, and I was actually going to report to you all on this last night, on diversity, equity, inclusion training for teachers. So we will be required to put together a training plan for providing professional learning for all of our teachers on promoting equity and inclusion for all students. The state board is going to put together a model for that framework, and then we will use that to build ours. That will be approved by you all. And then there are guidelines, like it has to be
available for parents to review if they want. If they have concerns about the professional learning materials, those have to be available for review within a reasonable time for a period upon request.
So it's similar to sex education and wellness.
Just without all the committees that are included there. So we will be putting that together. I told the principals our number one goal is so you can help people not be afraid of what we are doing in schools and conversations that might be taking place. And then you'll be prepared to provide training as we move forward. So do not provide any training for your staff until we have the state framework and we put it together. And I said, that's not because I have any concerns about what any of you might say, but just so we have consistency across the district in terms of the messaging that we're putting out there. So that's where we are with critical race theory and diversity education and
So if somebody stopped us at summer past and said, what is Logan City Schools doing with CRT? We could have this kind of a general statement. Mm-hmm.
We're working
with and collaborating with the state school board.
On diversity and inclusion.
We're moving forward in compliance with the guidelines from the state school board to appropriately provide professional learning for our teachers on ways to appropriately support equity and inclusion for all students. And if they say, well, you're going to get pulled into valuing, or it's going to tell my students because they're white they're not as valuable. Other people said, critical race theory tells minorities that they're victims. And Marilee says what the research actually shows is it does the opposite. It's this really interesting thing. When a minority student who has experienced discrimination learns about critical race theory, it moves their experience from, oh, this is something that's just happening to me, there must be something wrong with me, to understand, okay, there have been structures in place in the past that have caused people to think a certain way. This isn't about me. This is about a structure. And first, I don't have to personalize these discriminatory events that I've experienced. And I can be empowered to help change the structures. So they said what it actually does is it empowers children instead of causing them to feel victimized. But those are all things. I mean, if people come up with it, we can just keep going back to, we recognize the value of every student in our school district, and our task and our commitment as a school board is to ensure that every child in our school district receives the support and the resources and the guidance they need to be successful. That's all we have to keep going back to.
Professor from Westminster, obviously you used her with your principals. Is that something that would be valuable for our teachers to hear? Or are we going to take her message that they got at the principals meeting and
The principals got the information they can share about critical race theory if that gets brought up. I think right now, before we start doing anything district-wide, we want to see where the state board's framework lands. So then we design based off that. Yeah, and then we'll start doing some school-wide things. Greg participated in that conversation yesterday, which was great. He got to sit at a table with Jeff and with Melissa. And as we all know, Melissa, she's got lots of...
Oh, yes.
She shares.
Her hand was up a lot
today. Which is great that she brings in some great perspectives.
And because she's not from this area, mm-hmm. her experiences are very different than most of us in this room.
So we are going to continue. We talked in our meeting with principals. We said, so what do we do with this information? As we've talked about the whole concept of anti-racism, and as they've read excerpts from How to Be Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi. One of the things that he talks about, he says, look, the starting point is just look at your data and identify, are there examples of inequity based on race? Inequitable outcomes. Do you have an achievement gap? Do you have a discipline gap? Do you have, does your data show inequities tied to race? And if so, identify what procedures, policies, etc., would need to change to get rid of those inequities.
goes, that's it. And that's something that our schools are doing. We haven't looked at it as explicitly through a race, ethnicity lens, but it's something that we've, that process of looking at the data, identifying shortcomings, and making plans to address those is something our principals and teachers are already good at.
It's like an equity
so if we just,
review.
Yeah, if we just do an equity review, it's the same type of thing. Was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago now? We went to the poverty session at NSBA.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing they talked about there. Look at your data to identify, do you have inequities in outcomes between your students from poverty and your students not from poverty, and then identify, okay, well, what would the structural things need to be that we would put in place to address those inequities? It's the same process. It's just acknowledging that that also happens by race and looking at some of those. So that's where we're at there. I have an email. I was trying to find it in my history yesterday of a parent who sent us an email worried about critical race theory in schools. And Shanna, Daryl, and I composed a response that we sent.
We would love that.
So I will try to find that and share that with you.
Yes.
And it in a nutshell, says the same things we've been talking about. Just no, we totally understand. We don't believe anyone should be assigned guilt. At the same time, we recognize that in a democratic society, we all bear responsibility for promoting equity for every student in our district.
And as we move forward. And what about the rewriting of history? That's another thing that is sometimes brought up by certain pundits.
Well,
that's what critical race theory is doing. It's they're going back and taking our founding fathers and others and starting.
I think that's one of the misconceptions.
They're linking it with the 1619.
Yeah. All I think critical race theory is saying is there's a part of history that we did not write about the minorities that we should be including as we're trying to.
Such as the Native American narrative.
It's all this stuff that you heard recently about the problems they had in Tulsa 100 years ago, right? Stuff like that.
We never heard of.
We didn't hear that in school. But,
it happened.
It opened your eyes when you read about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a part of history that we haven't been made aware of.
I think that was what I learned history. That's all they're saying is let's try to make sure we understand that all of history, not just the part that George Washington went across the river standing up in a boat.
Yeah.
And chopping down the cherry tree, which he didn't do.
Melissa shared with me an L banquet. She's got Armenian background. And she was talking about the textbook that she used when she was a history teacher back in Florida. Same history book that we used had one sentence devoted to the Armenian genocide. And to her, it was obviously a much bigger deal. And I
lived in Cambodia, had my eyes open to
Khmer Rouge and
what was how bad that was.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, we've got to recognize and acknowledge that history hasn't always been kind.
Well, and you bring both those examples are good examples why having world history be a year. You know, think of some of the things we often get stuck in Roman Greece. Because that's important to talk about, you know, the start of democratic societies and that kind of thing. But won't it be great to be able to bring kids forward and look at what happens to a country like Argentina, you know, and the different things that go up and down and how in relationships of the United States with the world and some of the, you know, the genocides and other things.
And understanding why certain things still occur. For example, nationally, we currently have a big issue with getting African Americans to get vaccinated for COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
There's an underlying distrust of vaccinations and healthcare. Now, why is that? Well, if you go way back, I mean, even back to the Tuskegee Institute and experiments with smallpox, et cetera, that were done on
sterilization
that were done on African American servicemen. there's a hesitancy to just trust medical professionals, which is why the African American, you know, doctors associations are really making a concerted effort to get word out. But you recognize that some of these things that we didn't talk about a lot in school still influence behaviors and challenges that we see today.
Just as the discussions of, you know, what are schools like in other countries, which is why some of our immigrants, they, you know, you don't get involved with schools in other countries. It's, you know, it's not done. And so it's a totally different mm-hmm. view of education, understanding education around the world.
So I think it's great. We have a staff who's very committed mm-hmm. to equity and including all of our students. I think we see that at all of the schools we go to, when we watch children playing on the playground, when we see the makeup of our classes, when we look at the clubs and the activities at the high school. We have a staff that is very committed to it. And we have, I would say, by and large, a community that is very committed to it. We know there are pockets, as was even mentioned in our meeting today, where that's still a challenge to be addressed. But as we continue to build on the positive things that we're doing, recognizing the areas where we can make some improvement, we'll continue to see growth. So I'm very excited where we're going. And as I told the principals yesterday, to be in a position and in a state where the State Board of Education is willing to take a stand and say, this is important. When they're willing to make statements on the importance of equity and inclusion of students from diverse backgrounds, and then create board rule saying, and you have to train school staff on how to do this effectively, that's from the highest level saying, this is something we need to pay attention to. We need to do it right. We need to do it well. But if we're really going to be a public school system that addresses the needs of all students, this has to be something we consider. I think that's something to celebrate, that we have a state board that was willing to do that.
When it's presented, could we be invited? I would love to go through that training so that,
certainly,
like Larry said, so that when I talk with someone,
mm-hmm.
I am more inclusive.
Yeah, if, once we get that developed, we'll make sure that everyone's aware of it.
Wonderful.
Any other topic? So, yes, and so I apologize. I was going to do a whole presentation last night on here's
good.
What the rule says and here's what we're doing next, but it's going to be fun moving forward.
It's critical.
Yeah.
That's why I said that. So.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
I think that's just a theory.
So 8:30 tomorrow?
8:30 tomorrow. Would you like to be down here or upstairs? We can meet down here again?
Doesn't matter.
Let's go ahead and meet down here, and we'll jump into our agenda items. And
I'd like to take pictures of this one this day.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was going to erase it to get ready for the next day. That's part of the teaching.
And it's so great to see your faces and to not be separated by 6 feet. Just, I appreciate being together. This goes to
Rachel. Nice. Okay, thank you.
One suggestion, Jeff, for this room. Needs a waste basket.
Yeah.
Oh, we got one? One earlier. Oh, I always didn't hear it earlier.
Luckily, Dad, my mom's bleeding at 11:45, and it was 2:35 in the morning before they got it.